Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Affiliates. Not available in all states and situations. Prices may vary on how you buy.
Summer's here, and Nordstrom has everything you need for your best dress season ever. From beach days and weddings to weekend getaways and your everyday wardrobe, discover stylish options under $100 from tons of your favorite brands like Mango, Skims, Princess Polly, and Madewell. It's easy, too, with free shipping and free returns, in-store order pickup, and more. Shop today in-stores, online at Nordstrom.com, or download the Nordstrom app.
This MLB season, FanDuel's Dinger Tuesday is back. And this year, all customers get a profit boost to bet home runs every week. So gear up to go yard all season long on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in select states. Opt-in required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including any token expiration and max wager amount. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly. And before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know that we have a Patreon exclusive episode that is available right now. And the fun part about this episode is that it's actually told by my husband and favorite co-host, Austin. So it is the story of John McAfee. And you guys have to hear this story. It's truly like a Joe Exotic meets Elon Musk. But I say that in the best way, whether you like them or not. You'll have to listen to it to understand. But to listen to that episode, go to patreon.com/mamamystery, where you can also get access to a backlog of other exclusive episodes. And one of the things that I'm going to really try hard to start working on from now on is posting more exclusive content to Patreon. Other benefits of joining Patreon is that you get ad-free episodes. So not only do you get exclusive content that you can't find on Apple or Spotify, but you get ad-free episodes as well. So if you want to join, go to patreon.com/mamamystery, and let's get into today's case. On a chilly December evening in 1984, the Matthews family home in Greeley, Colorado seemed perfectly normal. Christmas was just around the corner, and 12-year-old Janelle Matthews had just returned home from performing at her school's holiday choir concert. She waved goodbye to her friend Deanna Ross and Deanna's dad, Russell, flicked the porch light as a sign that she was safely inside, and settled in for the night. Her father, Jim Matthews, was at her sister Jennifer's basketball game, and her mother, Gloria, had flown to California earlier that day to visit with family. Janelle was alone, yet she was safe and cozy, or so everyone thought, because within 1 hour, everything would change and Janelle would vanish without a trace. But let's go back to the beginning. Janelle Matthews was born Janelle Vieira on February 9, 1972, at Cottage Hospital in Santa Barbara, California. Her biological mother, Terry Vieira Martinez, was only 13 years old at the time of her birth. Initially, Terry tried her best to care for her newborn daughter, but quickly realized the responsibilities were just so overwhelming. And after 2 months, Terry made the heart-wrenching decision to give Janelle up for adoption, hoping to provide her daughter with a better life than she could offer. That's when Jim and Gloria Matthews came into the picture. The Matthews had struggled to conceive their first daughter, Jennifer, and they had been longing to expand their family, so they welcomed Janelle into their lives with open arms and immediately fell in love with their new daughter. By all accounts, Janelle was adored and cherished. In 1978, when Janelle was just 6 years old, the Matthews family moved from California to Greeley, Colorado, where Jim had been offered a position at Day Spring Christian School. Then later, he became the principal at Platte Valley Elementary School in Kersey, Colorado. Gloria, at the time, was a dedicated homemaker who truly prioritized her family. Janelle had a vibrant personality. She was outgoing, strong-willed, and loved being the center of attention. She was known to her family and friends as a performer at heart, loving musicals, especially Annie, and she loved to sing in the church choir. Her favorite band was Menudo, which might sound familiar. Menudo, if you'll remember, was a very popular boy band, and one of the members recently spoke out about the sexual abuse that he suffered at the hands of Jose Menendez, the father of the Menendez brothers. And these allegations really bolstered the Menendez brothers' allegations that Jose sexually abused them when they were young. And there is a lot going on with the Menendez case. There's kind of a lot of back and forth, but it feels like it's in limbo. So I know that some of you might be interested in an update on that case. And all I can really tell you is back in November or December, I think it was, the DA at the time made the decision that the Menendez brothers deserved at least a new trial or resentencing. And then there was an election that happened. A new DA was elected, and that new DA doesn't agree with the DA before him. So anyway, it's kind of all up in the air right now. We don't know what's going to happen. A final decision has not been made because it hasn't gone in front of the judge yet. So I will keep an eye on it and let you know if anything big or major happens. But anyway, Janelle was a big fan of Menudo. She also spent countless hours riding bikes, having sleepovers, and sharing her love of music with her best friend, Deanna Ross. Janelle's assertive nature was complemented by a sweetness and compassion that really drew people to her. Her mother, Gloria, fondly remembers Janelle meticulously planning her birthdays months in advance, detailing exactly what she wanted, from the type of cake to the decorations to who's going to be invited. Janelle had an undeniable presence, and she made every ordinary day more exciting for those around her. Yet behind Janelle's cheerful exterior was still a girl longing for connection and friendship. Her older sister, Jennifer, admired Janelle's confidence, but also wondered what their relationship would have been like as they grew older together, transitioning from typical sibling squabbles into a deeper friendship. Now, life for the Matthews family was seemingly picture perfect. Loving parents, two lively daughters, and a supportive community in Greeley. But that sense of safety and happiness was about to be shattered in the most tragic way possible. On December 20th of 1984, Janelle was really excited. She had been looking forward to her school's holiday concert for weeks. Christmas was her favorite time of year, and she had put a lot of effort into getting ready for the performance. Her parents weren't able to attend. Her mom was out of town visiting family in California, and her dad was at her older sister Jennifer's basketball game. But Janelle didn't mind too much because the concert was being televised, and she had arranged to get a ride home from her best friend Deanna Ross's dad, Russell. After the concert, Janelle and Deanna talked about how happy they were with the performance and their plans for Christmas break. Russell dropped Janelle off at her house around 8:15 p.m. He watched as Janelle walked up to the front door, flicked on the foyer light to show that she was safely inside, and then he drove off. It was a typical, uneventful goodbye. It was just a normal night. Once inside, Janelle kicked off her shoes, placed them neatly by the couch, and then draped her shawl across the back of the couch. She settled into her favorite spot near the space heater, a comfortable place that she liked to just sit and relax and warm up. And I actually remember doing that as a kid myself, like just hogging all the warm air from the vents. So I can picture it. But around 8:30 p.m., Janelle took a phone call from someone trying to reach her father. So she took down a quick message, nothing out of the ordinary. But when Jim Matthews arrived home around 9:30, a little more than just an hour later, he noticed that the garage door was left open. But other than that, everything initially seemed normal. The TV was on, Janelle's things were exactly where she usually left them, but then he quickly realized Janelle wasn't there. At first, Jim assumed she might have stepped out briefly, maybe visiting a neighbor or friend. But as the minutes passed and Janelle still hadn't returned, Jim started to worry. When Jennifer got home about half an hour later and said that she hadn't seen Janelle either, Jim's worry turned to real concern. He quickly called the police and they showed up fast, arriving around 10:15 p.m. The officers looked around and they saw no signs of a struggle or a forced entry. It seemed Janelle had simply vanished. As they searched the property, the police found footprints near the windows because it had snowed. So these were big footprints. They were obviously not Janelle's, suggesting that someone might have been watching her through her windows. Even stranger, the footprints had been partially covered up with a rake, as if whoever had been there was trying to hide their own footprints. So that night, no one really knew what happened to Janelle. And when police first started investigating, they initially thought Janelle might have run away, even though Jim and Gloria Matthews insisted that Janelle had no reason to leave. She was excited about the holidays. She had friends coming over. She had plans. Running away just did not make sense. In the following days, the search for Janelle ramped up dramatically. The community rallied together with hundreds of volunteers from around Greeley and surrounding areas, searching streets, woods, parks, and nearby fields. Flyers with Janelle's smiling face were quickly plastered all over town. Her disappearance even gained national attention, becoming one of the first missing children cases to be featured on milk cartons. Janelle's disappearance deeply affected the town. Parents who once felt comfortable leaving their doors unlocked suddenly started locking them, and kids who used to walk to school alone were now accompanied by adults. It was a drastic shift from the community's usual relaxed atmosphere. Police began searching for other leads, quickly moving past the runaway theory. They interviewed family, neighbors, and schoolmates, including Janelle's best friend Deanna and her father, Russell. They also closely and secretly monitored Janelle's biological mother, Terry Vieira Martinez, initially suspecting that she might have tried to reconnect with her daughter. Terry, however, had no idea Janelle was even missing and was quickly ruled out. Volunteers scoured open fields, wooded areas, and nearby farms multiple times, but nothing turned up. In February of 1985, hundreds of volunteers participated in a massive search effort, marking Janelle's 13th birthday. But still, they found no clues. the investigation garnered even more national attention when President Ronald Reagan spoke publicly about Janelle's disappearance in March of 1985, calling for national awareness of missing children cases. Despite the intense media attention, every lead investigators chased ended in disappointment. Months turned into years, and eventually the Matthews family had no choice but to declare Janelle. Months turned into years, and eventually the Matthews family had no choice but to declare Janelle legally deceased. Though they never gave up hope entirely, they moved away from Greeley, first transforming Janelle's room into a guest room and later moving out of the country entirely to try to escape the heartbreaking reminders, becoming missionaries in the Philippines. In 1994, after 10 years, when they had Janelle declared officially dead, Jim Matthews said, quote, "People might now say that we're giving up hope, but if you put your head and heart together, it will bring some finality. This time, we're saying she's not coming back," end quote. That same year, Gloria Matthews said, quote, "We've had 10 years without a reason, 10 years without a motive, 10 years with no answers. In all this time, don't you think the person who took her has said anything to anyone? At least someone could give evidence that would prove she is dead or tell us where her body is so we can bury her," end quote. I cannot even imagine how heartbreaking it is to accept that reality, that you know your daughter is not coming back, and now you just want to know where she is so you can just bury her. Like, having to accept that but still not have any answers, it's a closure that I don't know many of us could actually achieve. But eventually, Janelle's parents would go on to have a funeral for Janelle, despite not having her body. Their friends and family gathered to celebrate the life Janelle lived in an attempt to bring them some closure. The case gradually faded from the public eye, but never from the minds of those in Greeley, haunted by unanswered questions. It wasn't until nearly 35 years later, in July of 2019, that there was finally a breakthrough, changing everything everyone thought they knew about the Janelle Matthews disappearance. On July 23rd of 2019, construction workers were digging in a rural area outside Greeley, preparing the land for a new pipeline. It was an ordinary day until they unexpectedly uncovered human remains. Police quickly secured the area, and forensic tests confirmed what many had feared. Janelle Matthews had finally been found, about 15 miles from where she disappeared decades prior. Dental records matched perfectly, and the clothes that she had worn that fateful night were found alongside her remains. The discovery brought shock and relief mixed with grief for Janelle's family. For the first time in decades, they had answers about what happened to their daughter, even if those answers were heartbreaking and painful. With renewed vigor, authorities reopened the investigation. Their attention turned to a local man named Stephen Pankey. Stephen Pankey was an odd character who had inserted himself into the investigation multiple times over the years. Even though he'd claimed he didn't know Janelle or her family, he had lived near the Matthews home in 1984, and he was known to be familiar with the area where Janelle was eventually found. So let me tell you a little more about Stephen Pankey. He was born in 1951 in Ventura, California, into a conservative and deeply religious family. His grandfather and father both served as ministers, positioning him within a lineage of authority figures that he seemed eager to follow. Growing up, Stephen exhibited behaviors that set him apart from his peers. His interactions were frequently marked by confrontation, mistrust, and difficulty in social situations. After a brief stint in the U.S. Army, from which he was discharged in 1976, Stephen found himself working various odd jobs, often in positions that offered a semblance of power, including security work. He claimed discrimination related to his sexual orientation was a constant issue, alleging harassment from local enforcement because of it. So to add some context, Stephen claimed that he was a celibate homosexual and that he had an openly gay background despite being married to a woman. So I can only imagine that this guy is a homosexual but refuses to accept that or admit that because of his family being deeply involved in the church. So instead of just owning that, he says instead he's a celibate homosexual who just, I don't know, daylights as a married man to a woman? I don't know. But his interactions with authority, particularly with the police, were consistently strained and contentious. And Stephen chalked it up to them just not being accepting of his sexual orientation. But how would they know that if he's in, I don't know. I don't know. I guess that's all we have to know about it. But throughout the late 1970s and early 1980s, his behavior became increasingly erratic. In 1977, he faced accusations of sexual assault, although the charges were later withdrawn under unclear circumstances. He also exhibited threatening behavior toward family members and acquaintances, making persistent phone calls and intimidating random people with whom he had disputes. Neighbors and family members noted his aggressive tendencies, which only intensified over time. By the early 1980s, Pinky had settled in Greeley, Colorado, roughly 2 miles from the Matthews home. He briefly attended the same church as the Matthews family, claiming later he had no interactions with them, despite evidence suggesting otherwise. During this period, Stephen had frequent run-ins with the local community, including disputes with neighbors and accusations of harassment from various individuals. Notably, though, he seemed fixated on positions of minor authority, briefly serving as a security guard and having contentious relationships with people, basically kind of using that as his position of power. It kind of reminds me of BTK in that way, Dennis Rader, and we told that story on episode 71, but he had that same kind of like rent-a-cop energy. Stephen later moved to Idaho, and in 2010, he ran for lieutenant governor of Idaho, and then he ran for governor in 2014 and 2018. But throughout all this time, his involvement in the Janelle Matthews disappearance was suspicious from the start. Not only was he living close by, but he kept inserting himself repeatedly into the investigation. He showed a very unusual interest in the case, often speaking to the media and providing information that authorities had not publicly released. Now, while all of this is going on, his personal life was equally troubling. His marriage was strained, marked by strange and unsettling behaviors that his now ex-wife, Angela Hicks, vividly recounted years later. So 2 days after Janelle disappeared, they went on this abrupt trip that he claimed he had elaborately planned, but Angela said that she had no idea about this trip and she was confused about why they were leaving, but she didn't think much about it at the time, only after the fact. Now, Angela also noted his strange behavior during the time, with unexplained digging in their backyard and excessive attention to the news coverage about Janelle and alarming statements connecting their personal tragedies to Janelle's disappearance. For example, their son, Carl, was tragically murdered in 2008 after he was shot and killed by his girlfriend during a domestic dispute. And at Carl's funeral, Stephen said, quote, "I hope God didn't allow this to happen because of Janelle Matthews," end quote.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. It's the ultimate bundle for an unbelievable price. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. Get it and watch Marvel Television's Ironheart on Disney Plus.
I want to build something iconic.
A new season of The Bear on Hulu.
We can make people happy.
And The Epic, a Minecraft movie on Max.
Anything you can imagine is possible.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. All these and more now streaming. Terms apply. Visit DisneyPlusHuluMaxBundle.com for details.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Also bizarre was that around the time of Janelle's disappearance, a car that they were storing on their property mysteriously went up in flames, and they sent the car to a salvage yard. Then, during a church service a few months after Janelle's disappearance, when a minister said that Janelle would be found safe, Mr. Pinky muttered, "false prophet," to his wife. Now, at times, he would also ask his wife to read aloud to him newspaper articles about Janelle's disappearance. And I know that all of you are probably screaming, like, these are red flags. They are so obvious. I'm sure at the time, one by one, like, these things isolated, you know, the car going up in flames, unexplained, or taking that random trip abruptly was probably like weird, but not super indicative of like foul play. But of course, after the fact, when all of these things started to add up, Angela did go to authorities and told them what she knew. But Stephen Pinky's tangled relationship with authority, his erratic personal behavior, and his peculiar fascination with Janelle Matthews' disappearance created a very troubling profile, leading investigators to keep a very close eye on him. But without physical evidence or Janelle's body, it would take decades for the truth to finally surface, bringing both clarity and renewed heartbreak to the Matthews family. After finding Janelle, Stephen Pinky was indicted on charges of first-degree murder and kidnapping on October 13th of 2020. The trial of Stephen Pinky began in 2021, nearly 37 years after Janelle's disappearance. It was a highly anticipated event covered extensively by local and national media. Prosecutors argued that Pinky had exhibited suspicious behavior immediately following Janelle's disappearance, including an obsession with the case, knowledge of non-public information, and peculiar statements linking personal tragedies to Janelle's disappearance. So there's maybe not as much physical proof, but there seems to be a lot of circumstantial evidence. And witnesses, including his ex-wife Angela, provided powerful testimonies about his strange behavior during the critical days after Janelle vanished. Angela testified to that comment that he made at his son's funeral, saying that he hoped God didn't allow this to happen because of Janelle Matthews. And this statement stood out dramatically because it suggested that he might have felt guilt or a sense of divine retribution connected to Janelle's disappearance. Although he later denied ever making such a statement, his ex-wife Angela Hicks distinctly remembers hearing him say these words, and it became a crucial point in the investigation, highlighting his ongoing fixation with Janelle's case. The defense, however, argued that there was insufficient direct evidence linking Stephen Pinky to the actual crime. They emphasized the circumstantial nature of the case and suggested that he was merely a troubled man who desperately thrived on attention but was not guilty of murder. Throughout the trial, Stephen Pinky maintained his innocence, asserting that police had targeted him unfairly due to past conflicts. He continued to claim harassment and insisted he was not involved in Janelle's disappearance or death, and that his bizarre fascination with the case could be explained by him having Asperger's syndrome, which is a high-functioning form of autism. But on November 4th of 2021, the first trial ended in a hung jury. The jury voted to convict Stephen on a single misdemeanor count of making false statements to police, but they couldn't come to a unanimous decision regarding the murder charge. So the retrial started a year later, and on Halloween of 2022, he was found guilty of the kidnapping and murder of Janelle Matthews. He was sentenced to 20 years to life in prison, and his earliest possible release date is 2040, when he will be 89 years old. I think what makes Janelle Matthews' case so compelling isn't just the heartbreaking loss or the chilling circumstances, but the sheer length of time it took for answers to finally surface. For 35 years, her family lived without closure, stuck in this relentless cycle of hope and then uncertainty and grief. Her story gripped not only her small community in Greeley, but it also captivated people nationwide, symbolizing the lingering fear that every parent holds, how quickly and unexpectedly tragedy can strike, and how easily trust and security can just be shattered. It really is every parent's just absolute worst nightmare, and you never think that it's going to happen to you until it does. And I think her story also underscores something that we've seen again and again, which is that sometimes the answers can be hiding in plain sight. Stephen Pinky, with his bizarre behavior and constant interference, was always there, inserting himself into the case from the beginning. And I know there's other stories like this where, like BTK, for example, he has a lot of similarities to him. But BTK was like constantly writing those letters, if you'll remember, to the news media and to the cops, like kind of taunting them. It was like he just had to constantly be involved in the story. Their stories are a reminder that sometimes the truth isn't hidden behind elaborate conspiracies or unknown suspects. It's right there. But ultimately, I think what we can learn from Janelle's case is the incredible resilience of families and communities searching for justice. It reminds us of the power of never giving up, even when hope feels impossible. It also teaches us to trust our instincts, to pay attention to those around us, and never underestimate the value of persistence, even if justice takes decades to finally arrive. In the end, Janelle Matthews was more than just a headline or a face on a milk carton. She was a vibrant 12-year-old girl who loved music, her family, and Christmas. She deserved more than to become a cautionary tale, but through sharing her story, maybe we can keep her memory alive and find purpose through that pain, reminding us all to hold our loved ones closer and cherish every moment because life can change in an instant. Now, before we go, I want to talk about the case of Kaimani Lateague. This has been all over my For You page on TikTok, and I just wanted to find out more about this story and clue you guys into what is going on. So Kaimani Lateague was just 13 years old. She was a bright, friendly seventh grader from Toledo, Ohio. Known at Spring Elementary School for her kindness and cheerful personality, she was the type of kid that teachers loved to have in class. She was easygoing, always smiling, and quick to make friends. Just days before her 14th birthday, Kaimani was actually supposed to receive a special kindness award at school, a recognition of her consistent compassion towards her classmates. She lived with her grandmother, Dorothy Lateague, in North Toledo, along with their two dogs, and her mother, Tierra Kasten, lived in Cleveland, but they maintained a close bond despite the distance. Her father, Darnell Jones, was less present in her everyday life. He had a complicated past with criminal charges, including weapons-related convictions. Although he wasn't actively involved in raising Kaimani, he did occasionally see her with family permission. Now, on March 15th of 2025, this was like 2 weeks ago, Kaimani spent the day with both of her parents. It was a seemingly normal visit. They played video games, laughed, and nothing seemed off. But the next evening, things took a dark turn. Kaimani was home alone while her grandmother was working. Late at night, Darnell Jones claimed that Kaimani called him, frightened, saying that someone was trying to break in. He said he visited her with a cousin to check things out, stayed briefly, and left around midnight, believing everything was fine. The following day, March 17th, Dorothy came home from work to a disturbing scene. The house was in disarray, the stove was left on with gas leaking, and Kaimani's glasses and pajamas were left on the floor. Knowing immediately that something was terribly wrong, Dorothy alerted authorities and a frantic search began. The community rallied quickly. They were handing out flyers, knocking on doors, searching neighborhoods tirelessly. Kaimani's mother, Tierra, rushed from Cleveland to Toledo, joining the desperate efforts to find her daughter. Suspicion soon fell on Darnell, whose inconsistent statements began raising red flags with investigators. Then a crucial tip came from Darnell's girlfriend. He had suspiciously asked her to disable their home security cameras. Instead, she left them on, capturing footage of Jones hiding muddy boots and a rolled-up mat in their basement. Concerned, she reported this immediately to police. On March 24th, police made a grim discovery in an abandoned, burned-out house on Miami Street in East Toledo. They found a body later confirmed to be Kaimani Lateague. Her death was brutal. She had suffered severe wounds to her neck, she was sexually assaulted, and her hands were removed in an attempt to conceal her identity. The community was left reeling, devastated by the loss, and horrified by the violence. Authorities quickly issued a murder warrant for Darnell Jones, and the next day, acting on another tip, Columbus Police and SWAT located Darnell Jones in Victorian Village, Columbus. During his arrest, he opened fire on officers, initiating a shootout that ended with him being critically wounded but alive, and fortunately, no officers were hurt. So Darnell Jones was charged with murder, kidnapping, and assaulting police officers. As he recovered in the hospital, the Toledo community gathered to mourn Kaimani. Vigils were held at the site of her discovery, with hundreds showing their grief and anger, demanding justice and accountability. The case also ignited debate about whether enough had been done to protect Kaimani, given previous concerns reported by her school to Child Protective Services. And I also just talked about a case out of, I believe it was Indiana. I'm kind of talking off the top of my head here, but this stepmother had held her stepson captive for more than 2 decades in their home. And he was forced to live in this tiny, like 8x9 room with slanted ceilings. He didn't have a bathroom. So she put a bucket in there for him to use. She barely fed him. So he finally had enough after 20 years of this confinement and set his own house on fire, hoping that the firefighters would discover him and set him free. And so he almost passed from smoke inhalation, but he seems to be recovering right now in a local hospital. But the principals from his previous school have been coming out and saying that they were talking to or making reports to the Department of Child and Family Services because they were concerned about his behavior at school. When he was a fourth grader, I believe, he was taken out of school because these reports were being made after teachers discovered him stealing other kids' food from their lunch trays and then even digging in the garbage for food. He was just perpetually starving. So the school had had made two reports to the Department of Children and Family Services. And after that, the stepmom removed him from school. And if you're asking where his biological parents are, at the time, his dad was like really against hospitals and like Western medicine, I guess. And then he eventually passed, leaving the stepson in the stepmom's care. I don't know what the deal was with the biological mother, but regardless, this had been going on for decades. And the fact that the school had tried to make these reports and then the kid gets removed from school and still nothing is done just speaks to so many cracks in this system to protect children. And I mean, this is a tale as old as time. This is not new information, but what is it going to take for something to actually change and be done? Because this is insane that reports are made in Kehmani's case, in this other kid's case, and yet nothing is done until either someone is murdered or pretty close to being murdered. But I guess the thing that all three of these stories have in common is that other people kind of saw weird things going on and they were vigilant, but I guess sometimes just typical vigilance isn't enough and you have to like force people to do their jobs, which is really frustrating. But I guess all of this is to say, just stay vigilant, keep an eye out. If you see something, say something, and persistence pays off eventually. Even if you have to be a broken record and nag these departments to actually act and step in and force the courts to protect these children, it's worth the fight, I guess. So anyway, that is it for today. We will see you next week on Mom and Mystery with a new case. I've actually got a couple stories that I think you guys will find very interesting, from the case of Noah Pressgrove to the case of Paul Warner Powell. And if you have any recommendations of cases that you would like to hear about, go to momandmystery.com, scroll down to that big white box, and you can send us a message anonymously, or you can leave your name on there so I know who recommends it. But that's it. We'll see you next week. Mama Mystery out. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.